Good morning. Welcome back to the third hour of a special edition of the Roundtable. This is the first time we've ever done this. It may be the last, but it is the first time we've ever done it, which is open up the phone lines to callers. First of all, I just want to nip something in the bud. This is not something we can do every day because it takes an entire other staff, to man calls and to do all of that. So it's going to be this is an extraordinary situation. And so that is why we're doing it. Thanks to Nate Scheid, our wonderful call screener, but a great WAMCer who is here. And I asked for volunteers, and he volunteered, and I'm grateful for that. I just want to quickly say what I said earlier, which was I'm looking for as much civility, understanding, empathy, and hope. And I know the hope part is hard, and you don't really have to have that, but at least, if you
pretend.
Feel,
oh, please.
If you feel doomed, you can certainly express that. I don't have any problem with that. But I do want us to, have a meaningful discussion and a good discussion and one that is not, filled with any hate or deep rhetoric. All right. So one of the things I would like to discuss this hour doesn't have to be the only thing we discuss this hour, but one of the questions, and we really haven't talked about this, although this is, I think, you know, one of the elephants in the room, which is, what would you suggest we do to unify our country? And I give complete credit to Malia Dumont for coming up with that excellent question, by the way. What would you suggest to unify the country? And it is a great question and one that I think that we certainly want to answer and want to try to figure out of what is possible here. Let me just remind you, we have the University at Albany lecturer at Africana Studies, Jennifer Burns, with us. Jennifer, thank you very much for being here. I appreciate it. Malia Dumont, Chief of Staff and Vice President for Strategy and Policy at Bard College. Malia will be with us until 11:30 this morning. Thank you, Malia. We welcome political consultant Libby Post, who will also be here till 11:30. Thank you, Libby. Very nice to have you with us. Investment banker on Wall Street, Mark Whitman, who will be with us through the remainder of the show. And we add to the equation one of our one of the truly good guys and one of our panelists who I think has a lot to say on all of this is Dean of the College of Emergency Preparedness, Homeland Security, and Cybersecurity at the University at Albany, Bob Griffin. Bob, thanks so much for taking the time out.
Oh, thanks for the opportunity, Joe.
So we have a lot of people on the line. We have limited time, but I just want to get your opening statement as to your thoughts on, as everyone else has already done, your opening states on statement on what happened over the weekend.
Yeah, Joe, there's a sort of, I'll split it into two parts. The first part is as a security professional, I have a lot of questions about what happened. Line of sight, what happened to what should have been normal protocols for protection of a VIP. I think that it was the right call to do an independent review. Knowing the protocols, I question how that rooftop was uncovered the way it was. So a lot of questions as far as the nuts and bolts of what happened. And then the political side is I'm still reeling from it. I'm reeling from the impact. I do feel a little bit of anger at Cannon's decision today because I feel like it was partisanly timed. I also will tip my hat to Trump and his team for shifting gears and at least announcing that they're going to be taking on a more inclusive tone, which I think steals some of the thunder from the president. It certainly, I think, has changed the dynamics of the election. So I'll leave it at that.
Bob Griffin, thank you very much. Let's go to the phone calls. We welcome you, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-34-TALK-1. Basic rules as we do with Vox Pop. And we, I just remind you to try to keep your statements as brief as possible so we can get to as many folks as we can. Let's go, and really, again, our overall question is, what would you suggest to unify our country? We can take that in any number of directions and talk about any aspects, but I would like that to remain the question on the table as we move forward over the next 50 minutes or so. We go to Mame in Rensselaerville. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you for this very interesting discussion and important discourse. All this talk about unifying the country, and I thought about this after the last debate, or after the first debate, which was coming up with a ticket that the Democrats have to be more kind of strategic. And while I'm not the biggest fan of Mitt Romney, he seems like an elder statesman at this point. I'm a Democrat. I vote Democratic. Down ticket always. But I have two ideas about a ticket. One would be Romney, Kamala. The other would be Jamie Raskin, Liz Cheney.
And these are all in attempts, obviously. You are answering the question of unifying the country. And they're great on paper, but, you know, then there are the political realities. Right, Mame?
Yes, there are the political realities, but I think what we have to do is think about saving the country. And if you could bring people from both sides, I mean, Trump is not really an option, because if he's elected, that's the end of things. So if you could bring both sides together, and it's not the first time that would have happened in history. There have been other administrations where there was one candidate from each party who served together. So I don't know. I just think it's the only way forward. There has to be some kind of middle ground. And you would get moderate Republicans to move over, and you would get, I think, Democrats would vote for that anyway, because they don't want Trump to be elected.
Anybody
would,
like,
that would be,
on that.
I think.
Yeah, Mame, this is Mark. I commend your thinking on this, and I've thought about a number of the names you mentioned. Jamie Raskin wasn't one of them, admittedly. I think the one issue, or the one set of constraints I would place on a dream ticket, if you will, is I agree you ought to go get the Democrats to go as close to the center as they can stomach. But what I think they won't stomach is someone who doesn't support a woman's right to choose, mm-hmm. someone who has a radically different view of irregular immigration as the Democratic Party has generally held historically. I think those are the two biggest. So I think constructing a dream ticket, but using those and a couple other constraints to move the Democrats as sort of as far to the right as they'll stomach, is an interesting way to think about uniting, putting forth a ticket that would unite the country.
Mame, thank you very much for the telephone call. We now go to Rena in Roxbury. Rena, good morning. Welcome to the program.
Hello. Thank you. Yeah, I had thought of this before you raised the...
Did we lose Rena? We may have lost Rena. Oh, darn. Okay. Well, if we see Rena come back, we'll try to get her right back and put her ahead of the line, if she's able to call back. We go to Carrie in New Paltz. Carrie, go ahead.
Hi. I really believe that the way to unify the country is to reach young people, to get people in their 20s and 30s back into the political process. And I'm a Gen Xer, and a few weeks before the terrible debate, I heard a podcast with Gretchen Whitmer, and I was like, oh my God, she speaks normally. She doesn't speak like a politician. She talks about issues that are important to my generation, Gen X. She even like used a few curse words. And I know that we should all be talking about policy, but in terms of style, he really would appeal to people 50 and under. And so that's why I really believe that Joe Biden should be replaced as a candidate, because 4 years from now is too late. Now is the pivot of generational change, just like 1968. This is our 1968. And if we don't choose a more youthful person, I think we're really going to miss this moment.
It's a great thought. Carrie, thank you very much for sharing with us. Bob, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Democrats actually have a really strong bench. And, you know, the question now is there enough time to change? And is Biden willing to change? But sort of the feeling that I came out from the weekend is the Democrats are going to have to do something to shake up the race, or things look even more dire than they did last week when we were having multiple conversations about the fallout of the fallout from the debate. I'm just not sure I see all of the pieces coming together, to be honest.
I mean, obviously, before Saturday night, we were still talking about Joe Biden's press conference. We were talking about the debate. We were talking about the many in the upper echelons of the Democratic Party asking for a change. Libby, did that just go away after Saturday night?
I think so. I think it has gone away. I think Biden showed his cogency in his statement on Saturday, and I think yesterday there was something else. But I do think that that has gone away, and that the Democratic Party needs to coalesce around the nominee. And I've said this before, I might have said it before on the air here today, is that if Biden is not going to be the nominee, the Democrats have to go into the convention lockstep without any arguments with a decided upon nominee that's going to get nominated, who's going to get the majority or the overwhelming majority of the delegate votes, and we can move forward. But, you know, I think the notion that, first of all, it's what month are we in?
It's July.
It's July.
Yeah.
Right.
I think Libby is saying very subtly that she's been locked in this room for a little too long.
Yeah, well, there is that too. But it's July. The election's in November. A lot can happen between now and then. And, you know, we just need to move forward. I understand that people want an alternative. And Gretchen Whitmer has been talked about, Jamie Raskin, a lot of these other folks. I just think it's a little late in the game to have a sea change like this and be able to win. So, you know, if that's what happens, I'll be right there and I'll work for whoever the nominee is and work hard and use my rhetoric to get people out to vote. If it's Biden, I will do the same thing, because really the thing here is stopping Trump, stopping Project 2025, stopping us from becoming a white nationalist Christian country.
Malia.
So I don't agree that that the Democratic Party has coalesced even more around Biden over the weekend. I think the opposite has happened. So look at what are the two enduring images from each of the presumptive candidates over the past couple of weeks. One is bloody Trump with his defiant fist mm-hmm. held high, looking
fight, strong.
Yes. And the other is Biden bumbling at the debate. These are the images that are competing against each other right now. And I take what was the last caller from New Paltz?
Carrie, I believe.
Yeah. Her point about the next generation and not even the next generation, everyone under the age of 50 really needing to get energized and not being energized by a Biden ticket right now. I'm here as an analyst and not as an advocate. It's just what I've observed over the weekend. You know, talking to people who are associated with various campaigns as well, it just seems like there is, even among those at some of the highest echelons of the Democratic Party, more doubt about how Biden as a campaigner is going to hold up against Trump going forward. And this goes back to something that one of the previous people who wrote an email was complaining about, sort of a sense of a lack of strategy and long-term planning in the Democratic Party. I think that's what a lot of young people are concerned about, and they're not going to be – a lot of people are going to feel the same as Mark, that they're not energized to vote.
We'll get to more calls, and we welcome yours, 1-800-348-2551.
You know, what continues to circulate for me is this constant overlooking of Kamala Harris. There's always a different offer on the table. Mm-hmm. And a demand for her to continue to prove herself, or even like on Friday's show, Joe, it was this would give her legitimacy. And I'm really concerned about people not being aware of their racial microaggressions around these things, because she's the only one of these people that the Democrats are throwing out there, or other people are throwing out there, that has served as vice president. So she does have some experience beyond these governors and people. And also, you know,
as a senator, as a prosecutor.
Exactly. Right. She has a long history. Now, we don't always have to agree on all of her, say, decisions about everything. That's part of what a candidate is. However, the fact that it's, I don't want to say we just should assume she should be the vice president candidate, but there has been a long history in this country of pretty much rolling into that the vice president, who's already served as the person who would be in command, would be identified as the next to take the lead and the nomination. And over and over, people are looking for ways to not pick her. And I think that's really a serious problem, and people need to examine their elements of gender and race, and leaving out the Asian American element here. It's very much still talked about in a binary black-white way. Mm-hmm. And she does have a collective draw to Asian Americans as well. And we need to hear more about that.
I also, I'm struck in the discussion, much has taken place, where people say, well, she had a failed presidential bid. Well, Joe Biden had how
again,
many?
Again, though, we're highlighting her failures. We're almost getting to an early, like, Ketanji Brown Jackson. when she was up, and the vitriol and the attacks on her. We did not see anything similar to that with Amy Comey Barrett or others.
But to get back to what Mame from Rensselaerville, our first caller, was talking about, this so-called unity ticket. I mean, I think there are all kinds of legal and procedural issues that dictate. I mean, I agree with Jennifer, but also I don't think legally there's really any alternative to having Kamala at the head of the ticket. But also there are lots of ways to have a so-called unity approach that don't require those people to be on the ticket. They can still coalesce around the nominee. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are a lot of ways to move forward in a unified way.
Every line is going, so I want to get
it would be great if it was Harris
calls.
And Gretchen Whitmer.
Oh, yeah.
Let's go to, Rena's back. We found Rena. Hi, Rena. How are you?
Oh, hi. I don't know how much you heard of my question.
Start over.
Okay. And I thought of this before you raised the goal of talking about unity. I was thinking if, I think someone mentioned that the possibility of Joe Biden becoming elected and then possibly resigning, and then Kamala Harris would be president. If so, the next in line is the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson. Where does that put things? And then does that make him vice president? Or, you know, and who follows as speaker then? But it would be an interesting combination, talking about unity.
No, what would happen
what do you
is
folks think about it?
If Biden wins and then resigns and Kamala becomes president, Kamala then nominates a vice president, which has to be voted on by the House. And so
I just remembered the succession of a speaker.
Right. And then this is, it's like if because I was watching Madam Secretary reruns all week weekend, and they had
it was a
this.
Great show.
You know, right. There was a succession. The president's the plane was gone. The vice president had an emergency gallbladder operation. The other two couldn't do it for various reasons, and it ended up being the Secretary of State who ended up. But it's like the House Speaker is the third in line for succession. But that's if there's no president or vice president. But if the House remains in Republican hands and Kamala has to go to the House to approve a vice president, it's not going to be easy.
Thank you for doing your research.
Hey, anytime.
I appreciate it. What you've done
and Biden
the
should
show.
Never do that. There should because that will make the Democrats look incredibly
It'll
corrupt and calculated.
Just
never.
A point of clarification.
Rena, thank you for calling. Yes, go ahead.
So I think the new vice president has to technically be approved by a majority vote of both houses of Congress.
I don't know about that. I'll look.
Okay.
Homework.
All right. Let's go to Chris, who's been waiting a long time in Athens. Hello, Chris.
Hi. Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Well, all right. Thanks for taking my call. I'll preface this by saying that it's been frustrating to hear the chorus of calls over the past couple of weeks to replace President Biden on the ticket. And begs the question, at least from me, that whether everybody has heard his public utterances since the debate, starting with the NATO address, the AFL-CIO address, his press conference, the rally in Michigan, where in each of them he really demonstrated an unusual command of the issues and an ability to think on the fly, because a number of them were unscripted. And it really seems to me that in order to unite the party, uniting behind him and Vice President Harris would be the best the best route. And I have to say that, a couple of people just recently now stole my thunder on this, Libby and is it Jennifer, I think?
Yeah, sorry. They're good at that.
That's quite very happy. But, it does appear to me that's our best route forward, especially considering that he's been ahead of in the most recent polls.
Bob Griffin.
In the polls that I've seen, I have not seen Biden ahead. I'm looking at the 538 polls right now, and he's actually trails from 1 to 3 points. I mean, it was a toss-up before this weekend, and again, I think that dynamics have fundamentally changed. The issue that I'll toss on the table is that there's an enthusiasm gap in my mind. And while Biden, I thought, did okay in some of the talks that came after the debate, I constantly hold my breath and wait and worry about which Biden is showing up. And the comment that was made just a few seconds ago that I thought was the juxtaposition was really important. Was the juxtaposition between Biden's performance at the debate versus Trump's performance after the assassination attempt, and that in so many places is going to define I think the vote in November, and that doesn't play well for the Democrats.
All right, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll continue.
I just want to say Mark was right. If a vice president is nominated, it has to be approved by both houses of Congress.
Libby Post?
It's also, fun fact, Joe, is that Ford actually talked about putting a Democrat as his vice president after Nixon's resignation and was advised actually by the Democratic leadership not to do that.
And we got Bob Dole instead. Yes.
Yep.
All right.
No, Nelson Rockefeller.
No, when he Ford? Ran for – when Ford ran, though, he ran with Bob
Dole.
Oh,
Dole. Yeah.
Yeah. But. Okay. So Libby Post – Malia DeMond, thank you very much for being here. I really appreciate you being with us. When we come back, we have many more calls. Lines are loaded. We'll get to as many as we possibly can. We'll take a lightning round, perhaps. And Jennifer Burns, Bob Griffin, and Mark Whitman will stay with us. And we'll get to all of this good stuff right after we have a short break. And we'll return right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our special broadcast on this Monday morning following a tumultuous weekend and one where there was an assassination attempt on a former president of the United States. Broadly, we're asking the question, what would you suggest to unify our country? We're going in a lot of different directions. We have many folks on the line, and we promise to go quickly through so as many people can have a say as possible. Just two quick things that I want to mention. One is that Donald Trump was on Fox News this morning and said that he is expected to choose his running mate later today. So we will await that announcement. Also, and I tee up this golf ball directly to you, Bob Griffin, which is that another thing that is being reported is the a lack of a sweep of the building from where that the Secret Service did not sweep the building where the shooter was perched. And the Secret Service director says the agency will participate in an assassination attempt investigation. And I'm just curious as to what you make of that.
If they didn't, then it was a violation of protocols. The building should have been swept. I thought that there should have been somebody on the roof. There's no way that a line of sight from the building to the stage should have been left unguarded. Major lapse on behalf of the security apparatus and finding out who was responsible for that building and why it didn't get done. And, you know, ultimately Secret Service is responsible, but making sure that we understand what happened so that we could fix the vulnerability. It shouldn't have happened. He shouldn't have had a clear shot like that.
All right, to the calls we go. And Abigail in Kingston, go ahead.
Hello. I have an analogy I'd like to make between democracy and the bird. We need two wings to fly. The bird needs two wings, two healthy wings to fly. Therefore, all of the discussion is terrific in terms of democracy. We have a left wing and we have a right wing, and hopefully we will come to the middle. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Abigail. Well said.
To speak to that, I think who Trump nominates or who he identifies as his vice president will send the message if this truly is a unity moving forward, or if it's a temporary, let's galvanize behind me and I'll soften my language for a minute and then it'll go back to what it had been.
Yeah, that blue button. There you go. Go ahead.
Yeah, if he chooses J.D. Vance.
Mm-hmm.
Two? Yeah. Is two on?
It isn't.
No, I don't know. I don't hear Malia, that's all. Is two on? Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, if he chooses J.D. Vance, mm-hmm. then that's a clear indication of where this is going.
That's
that,
right.
That the unity talk over the weekend may not, you know, was a temporary thing. Mm-hmm. But if he doesn't, then...
I mean, J.D. Right. Vance was the first person who came out and said that this was a Democratic plot.
So, right, mm-hmm. exactly.
All right, let's go back to the phones, and we go to, let's see, we go to Bruce in Kingston. Hello, Bruce. Go ahead.
In terms of people's thinking, words really matter. And it's not a matter of whether Mr. Trump is either above the law or below the law. He's outside the law. And just like in the Wild Wild West, anybody outside the law should be treated as an outlaw. Now, in the Wild Wild East, he should also be treated as an outlaw and put behind bars for the good of the country.
All right. Thank you very much, Bruce. I mean, anybody have anything else other than the obvious? I mean, I just think.
I just understand the frustration is that, you know, if you look at all of these cases, especially Cannon's ruling today, is that you feel like there is a different set of rules for Donald Trump than for the rest of us. I mean, it really gets to the heart of equal justice for all. And it gets sort of lost in the issue of the assassination attempt and the sympathy we feel because we're empathetic human beings. But I feel like Cannon picked the time. I feel like Clarence Thomas set up her arguments in his writings, and you feel like it's all being done in a jury-rigged partisan way.
We go to Ruth in Alford. Hello, Ruth.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call. I will just read my a very short statement.
Oh, is it a manifesto?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay, good. All right, go ahead, Ruth.
I'm a little emotional about this.
Understood.
Though. I am glad he's talking unity. But when Trump and his acolytes play with fire, and many are very, very pro-gun, when you state, please find me, i.e. steal me 11,000 votes, and worst of all, or most dramatically, hang my vice president, Mike Pence, assassination either way, do not be that surprised or that shocked if fire comes back to you. I think that is like a bottom line understanding, and I am thrilled. I would be so thrilled if the vice president chosen and the unity that he might bring forth. But we also have to state that. Thank you.
Ruth, thank you very much. Thank you for your well thought out statement. And I understand. I mean, that's one of the reasons I wanted people to talk today, because it is emotional. It was an emotional weekend. I mean, I was down with one of my oldest and dearest friends, and I won't say the weekend was ruined by it. It wasn't, but it certainly, like, that's what I'll remember. And it's, it is emotional. It's a lot going on.
Do you think this holds the same gravity and impact on people's lives that it has for some of us? Because, you know, when I was driving in this morning, one of the people on the radio, on, I don't know, one of the major channels, was talking about how quickly social media moves people on, that they're not as emotionally invested in some of these events. Whereas when they were children and, you know, JFK happened and other things like that, it was something that resonated with people for a really long time. Whereas now we live in this stratosphere where the story's over in a week and people have moved on to something else because they're inundated with all kinds of other information. And so I just wonder if people aren't sort of political junkies, how much our society has been so normalized that this story is like, well, of course that happened. And they've just kind of don't have the same emotional shakeup.
But I also think that especially a lot of Republicans, because of the kind of rhetoric that we've talked about that has inundated or sort of suffused all the campaigns, we're not surprised that this happened.
Right.
And so it doesn't resonate with a large chunk of the Republican Party the same way it does with some Democrats who frankly just find this shocking.
Right.
It's a lot of Republicans, I think, have just been waiting for this kind of, and it justifies or it sort of vindicates the narrative that of oppression and victimization.
Mm-hmm. Stephen joins us now. Hi, Stephen, go ahead. Hi, Stephen. Oh,
it's Lucas.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
You were on mute, sorry.
Oh, that's okay.
But anyway, my idea for unifying the country is more long-term, but the idea is to have more shared experiences. For example, when young people leave high school, some of them go to college, some of them don't. Some go to trade school, some don't. Some join the military, some don't. So once you leave high school, there is not a lot of shared experiences anymore. You know, the public town square is now on social media, and you know, people work different jobs and have different identities, and there's not a lot of get to know your neighbor, learn how to disagree respectfully, not a lot of cross-generational talk about politics. So that's my idea, and it's very long term, 10, 20 years down the road, it's not going to be able to fix our immediate problem. But looking long term, that's my idea.
Thank you very much for sharing it, Stephen. I appreciate it. Bob, you were going to say something right before we went to
just real quick. You know, Joe, it's going to be interesting to see what the polls show. But again, we're at the beginning of the convention. So what I would have said to you anyway is that Trump is going to see a bump because of the announcement of the vice president candidate and the convention. And we still don't even know the fallout or still don't understand the fallout of Biden's performance in the debate as far as the polls. So there's we really don't know what people are thinking, or if people are so set in the positions that the true believers for Trump are going to continue to be the true believers, and you see a lot of that language, or if this has any impact sort of on that middle ground, that 5 to 6% of the unidentified that is going to make the difference in the next election.
All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we are going to do a lightning round and just go through as many calls as we can and let people get some stuff off their chest. And we will come back to that right after this. All right. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable. So we have 15 minutes and every phone is is lit. So we're going to go through the calls quick. I ask you all to tell me what you got to say, and then we're going to move on quickly. But that way we can get to everybody or as many people as possible. And we'll try to do this in as fair an order as we possibly can. We go to Lucas in Greenfield. Hello, Lucas. Go ahead.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning.
I just wanted to call in. You guys were talking about excitement for millennials and the younger part of the base. And I just watched a podcast with Clinton, Obama, and Biden all on it. And it was really just a wonderful... And it was a wonderful podcast that kind of excited me, right? Biden, you worry when he opens his mouth. You guys were talking about this, about excitement. Obama has charisma. Mm-hmm. Obama, when he speaks out, he brings the young voter, says, you need to come out here and vote for Biden because I believe in him. He was my guy, and he can be your guy. Now, regardless of what the DNC and the Democrats want to do, the Democrats want to do with Biden if he wins, with Kamala, if Obama comes out and endorses Kamala, that excites a lot of people and a lot of young people, myself included. And I'll just leave you with that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Lucas. I mean, it's a question that certainly is out there, and where we have heard of the public statements by former President Obama that have been very glowing toward Joe Biden, and yet privately we're hearing and reporting that Nancy Pelosi, along with Barack Obama, are concerned, and they have their concerns and how to deal with those. And again, where that stands now after this weekend, I don't quite know. George is in Fort Edward. Go ahead, George.
Yes, I think the best thing we could do to bring our country together is take away some of the power in the party system. We have primaries where supposedly candidates who want to run for office could go into it. But if you're endorsed by the party rather than somebody else, some Joe Blow, you don't have a chance in heck to get it. And I just think, what is the point of a primary if you don't have anybody to pick from, because you're the one that is supported by the party is going to win 9 out of 10 times, probably. That's all. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate your call. By the way, in the case of 2024, Joe Blow's name is Dean Phillips, for whatever it's worth. Okay. Let's go to Paul in Williamstown, Massachusetts. Hello, Paul.
Good morning, panelists. The path to unity would be to be working from the same set of facts. And the sad part is that the structure of our media, which needs clickbait to stay paid, is such that it's very susceptible to mistruths and propaganda. We know the story of the Russians easily tweaking the 2016 election cycle in Donald's favor, that a lot of people were just voting based on mistruths. That's only getting worse, if not biblically worse. So is the solution to curtail or govern much more closely social media?
Great question, right? We've talked about this a lot on this program, of exactly what we do with these very powerful tools that we have at our disposal. Bob, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, the issue of disinformation, even immediately after the assassination attempt, is something that we all need to study and keep our eye on. It also, the other flip side of that question, Joe, is that how much power do we want to give the government to control information? If you have a Trump administration and institute, Project 2025, it could have significant impacts on the freedom of speech.
James is in Hudson. James, go ahead. All right. No James. We'll go to Larry in Hudson. Hello, Larry.
Hello. Yes. In support of Biden, I'm disappointed in the amount of yellow journalism. And if you want to know what that is, just go to Tom Hartman. You can read about it. It's been around for lots and lots of years. But the man had one bad day during the debate. He had a cold. He had, for all kinds of reasons. And historically, all of the other presidents had a bad debate. And so I think you should look past that. He also did great for the next few days. He also stuttered since he was young. How many of you people have had stuttering to overcome? So I think we're, and of course, the important part is that we cannot have Trump get elected.
Well, I think that is a very important... Are you backing up? I don't know. Or his eyeglasses are ready. I just don't understand. I mean, I get the point about Trump, and I understand that. And that's actually a lot of the concern, a lot of the rhetoric that's coming out from the right now of saying it's this, you know, this like world is going to be over if Trump is elected, that led to the events of Saturday. But I mean, looking at I don't think yellow journalism is looking at a decline in a president, an age, aging, asking the question of is somebody who enters office in a second term at 82 and ends at 86, if that is something. And if what you see now, I mean, that was, I think, generally for most people, that was more than a bad night. I mean, if it was just some stumbling and some, I mean, that was more than a bad night.
But I think it's not really a question of his competence. It's Democratic voters' perceptions of his confidence. That's because the presidential campaign is all about performance. It's not about the ability to govern. It's about how well are you performing and how well are you able to motivate voters. And so some voters are still motivated by Biden, but there are a lot of them who suddenly felt like they're questioning his ability to win the election based on the debate performance. That's just to point out that's the debate that's going on within the Democratic Party right now.
Jake is in Glenville. Go ahead, Jake.
Hi there. I think that when it comes to sort of unifying the country, we should be focusing less on unifying around an individual and unifying more around a set of democratic ideals. The Republican Party has really set itself as a fascist movement that is against those democratic ideals that most Americans stand behind. And so rather than seeing, oh, who should be president, we should be trying to unify the Democratic Party at all levels. Rather than directing all this attention to what one person can excite everyone, let's find what other races are going to excite people and get to the polls. Get support for those House races. Get attention on those. If people are turning up for the House races, they're going to vote for whichever president is going to support that Democratic congressional candidate. I think that's really what the support should be.
It's a great point. It's an important point. I mean, obviously, a lot of those House races, they're saying, okay, but is who's at the top of the ticket going to be a drag on my race? And I think those are, I understand your point, and it's a valid one, absolutely. But there are those questions that come as well. Russ is in Greenfield. Go ahead, Russ.
In order to unify the country, we need to have a common goal or a common thing to oppose. Instead, we have a country of opposition, and I believe Donald Trump He promotes divisiveness. So we're not going to have unity in this country. And the national conversation has changed so much in just these last 2 weeks. First, after the debate, and then after that assassination attempt on Trump 2 days ago. We have no idea what the next incident is going to be between now and November that is going to change the conversation. And before I go, I'm just going to read this quick. I just sent this letter off to the local editor on Friday. Little did I know what was going to happen on Saturday. Here's something to think about. What would we do if both Joe Biden and Donald Trump died in their sleep tonight of natural causes? Seriously, what would we do as individuals and institutions? I'm not asking for this or suggesting that it should happen, but we do know that everybody's going to die someday. So what would we do? And I only sent that in as something to promote conversation. Right. It hasn't been printed yet, and now I'm concerned that somebody's going to single me out just because I wrote it.
Well, reference Thanks. Back to this program and the time stamping and thanks to Russ, a.k.a. Nostradamus. We go to Joyce now in Schenectady. Joyce, hello. Joyce,
hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Hi. I'm a senior. I'm still working 10 months a year, and this is my manifesto. I will never unite behind anybody who puts the economy ahead of the health of the planet. Thank you, panel.
Oh, that's great. Joyce, thank you very much for being so concise and getting your point across. I appreciate that. We go to we have 1 minute, probably won't time for one more call. Peter in Hoosick. Go ahead, Peter.
Hi. I haven't heard anyone talk about the possibility of the thing being staged. I just want to make a couple of points.
Well, we don't have time for a couple of points, but
quick.
Just give me one. I got 30 seconds.
Trump
go ahead. Give me one.
Okay, Trump was turned 90 degrees to the right. From the shooter's barn to the stage, there is no way. There's simply no way.
All right, I'm gonna go with I'm with that one just because I don't. I think we're too far. I think we're too soon in the investigation to go the grassy knoll route. So, just gonna hold off on that. My thanks to everyone who called in on the during this special program. You were all great. I really appreciate it. We left a lot of people on the line. My apologies to them and Carol and Bob and Ted and Alice and everybody who called in. We apologize to you. And obviously, we'll be discussing all of this much, much more. My thanks, of course, to our panelists, Malia DeMont, Bob Griffin, Mark Whitman, and, of course, Jennifer Burns. Thank you all very much. We'll be back right after this.